Okay, I probably should start off with something. I don't even have my notes here. Is at the beginning of the sermon, it's going to sound political, but it's not. I'm just telling you right now, it's not a political sermon. However, I want to use something from modern politics to make a different point. So, if you are on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, maybe not MySpace anymore, and you see the acronym T as in Tom, D as in dog, S as in Sam, TDS, what does it mean? Right, exactly. Trump derangement syndrome. If you see TDS, it means Trump derangement syndrome. And again, this is not a political sermon. I'm not saying it's Trump is good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just pointing out. That's what I say next to my notes. No, now, don't worry. This is not going to be a political sermon. However, Trump derangement syndrome came to mind after I recently read the story of Lazarus. Who was Lazarus? He was a friend of Jesus, as were Mary and Martha. He raised him from the dead. But before we talk about that, we're going to talk about a portion of that story. What is, if we say Trump derangement syndrome, what is it? How would you describe Trump derangement syndrome? No takers? You see, this is dangerous. In the modern world, it's dangerous, right? Okay, my definition would be disliking Trump, his behavior, and or his policies so extremely you are unable to properly judge him or anyone associated with him rightly, you frequently overreact, and you often behave in a way that would not be socially acceptable if directed toward anybody else. Does that sound fair? I mean, again, it doesn't mean what Trump is doing right. I'm not trying to make an argument about Trump. But Trump derangement syndrome is basically getting so whacked out about Trump that you behave in a way that you'd never behave towards somebody else. Fair enough definition? Basically, TDS turns over control of the brain and the body from reason and intellect to emotion. Turns over the control of the brain and the body from reason and intellect to emotion. Now, I want to make a point again, because it's not a political sermon. Just because someone says something against Trump, his administration, or one of his supporters does not mean that they are exhibiting Trump derangement syndrome. And that label, that TDS label, can be used unfairly to bludgeon, right? Somebody says something negative, they have reason for what they believe, and they say, you've got TDS, that's not fair. However, some people have truly gone off. This is not a political statement, I think it's a statement of fact. Some people have truly gone off the deep end when it comes to hate of Trump. We've got to be cautious. Now, moving on. I mentioned that the story of Lazarus reminded me of Trump derangement syndrome. And I wouldn't blame you if you scratched your head. I can't afford to. I don't have enough hair to take the chance. But if you scratched your head when I made that comment. So let's join the narrative about the incident with Lazarus and see if that can clear things up. We join the story. This is after Jesus has incredibly and supernaturally raised Lazarus from the dead. Let's turn to John 11. We're going to look at verses 45 through 53. John 11, verses 45 through 53. Okay. Are we there? Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do? This man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it is better for you that one man should die for the people, not that the whole nation should perish. He did not say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day on, they made plans to put him to death. So from that day on, they made plans to put him to death. Okay, folks. What, Augie?
They gave him a death
sentence? Well, theoretically, they weren't in court, but basically they decided to murder him. Yeah. Yep. So let's talk about it. What horrible thing did Jesus do? Nothing? See, that's not fair. You're not trying to look at both sides. Nothing, right? Well, the horrible thing that Jesus did was brought a man back to life. The horrible thing that Jesus did was brought a man back to life. Jesus derangement syndrome. They couldn't handle it. Jesus derangement syndrome. Now, of course, in this case here, part of the Jesus derangement syndrome was self-interest, right? Because they were worried about losing their positions of authority. But isn't that true even of, and again, I'm not being political, but some of the Trump derangement syndrome? Both men, Jesus and Trump, are a threat to established authority. And establishment authority doesn't respond well to that. Does that make sense? When you threaten authority, whether it's in a company or a country or even in society, those who have the authority, the establishment, don't take well to it, and Jesus threatened to it. And please note that I should have said with Jesus, I should have said both threatened, not threatened. And that's true with Jesus too. Jesus still threatens the power of the establishment. And they still attack because of it. A perfect example would be China today, wouldn't it? Well, look at what the Chinese are doing to Christians. Now, in fairness, they're doing to Islam too. But look at what the Chinese are doing to Christians. Jesus continues to threaten authority because if you become a follower of Jesus, who is your Lord? God, Jesus. And you will not do what Jesus says you shouldn't do, and you will do what he says you should. Okay, at this point, I want to make something pretty clear. Actually, perfectly clear. I am not comparing Trump to Jesus. I want to make that perfectly clear. Trump is not the Messiah. Trump is not the sinless Son of God. Trump deserves much of the negativity that's directed at him. I don't think anybody in here today would say, I want my kid or my grandchild or my great-grandchild to behave the way that Trump often behaves. Doesn't mean he's not a good president. I'm not going with the pendulum to the other side. But I am not comparing Jesus to Trump. Jesus didn't do anything to deserve the negativity he got. But the reason I mention Trump is because often there are things 2,000 years ago and they're hard to apply today, right? Because we weren't there. We read the words, we get the pictures and stuff like that, but we can see how people have unreasonably treated somebody else. I think Trump derangement syndrome is an example of that, but haven't you seen it in life too where you just can't understand, why is this person just always so mean to this other person? And I think this modern example of people turning off intellect and reason and jacking up emotion can help us understand just how ridiculous it was back then when they did it to Jesus. Doesn't it help you understand just how ridiculous? If there was social media back then, could you imagine what Twitter would look like after he raised Lazarus? They'd freak out. They'd come up with all their excuses. And of course, the ridiculously wrong reaction to Jesus' healing was far from the only time that Jesus' derangement syndrome kicked in. Another example was around Jesus healing on the Sabbath. What was the Sabbath, folks? Sabbath?
Rest day.
Last day of the week. Although was Sabbath, how did Jews reckon time? Do they go from sunrise to sunset? What was the day in Jewish time?
Sunset to
sunrise. So the Sabbath was what we would call Friday night sunset to Saturday night sunset. And let's take a look at John 5, 16 through 18. John 5, 16 through 18. Are you there? No worries. So one of the rules we have in here is when we read Scripture, we want everybody to read for themselves, so we wait till everybody turns to it. Okay. And this was why the Jews, look at this again. And this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working." Look at verse 18. This was why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him. Because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. And people want to teach you that Jesus is somehow a created being, not a divine being. They have to basically ignore the entire book of John because it makes it so clear that Jesus is divine. First century Jewish leadership got very cranky with Jesus healing on the Sabbath. They wanted to murder Jesus because he was healing on the Sabbath. Are you not convinced, maybe? You might say with that one, think to yourself, the only reason they wanted to kill him was because, and I can understand this would be a little hard for them to accept, he was equating himself with God, right? And Jews, if anything, were truly monotheistic. And at that point, luckily, had given up idolatry. Although, arguably, I would argue that they made an idol out of the Sabbath. Idolatry is not just physical things. But let's take a look at Matthew. Let's see if we can make it a little clearer that the Sabbath alone was enough. Let's look at Matthew chapter 12. We're going to look at verses 9 through 14. Matthew chapter 12, verses 9 through 14. And what I would suggest, just like I tried to bring a modern example when it comes to people getting ridiculously worked up, think of this too. You just imagine you know somebody, and I'm sure you all do, who has been dealing with an affliction for a period of time, and they want to get it healed. And insert that picture. I want you to picture that person in your mind that you care about, in your mind, and I want you to picture that person as the person with a withered hand here, okay? Try to bring this home. He went out from there and entered their synagogue. And a man was there with a withered hand. And they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" So that they might accuse him. He said to them, "Which one of you who has a sheep, if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not take hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value is a man than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And the man stretched it out, and it was restored, healthy like the other. What's the next verse say? Anybody want to read that aloud? Did you hear that? But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him how to destroy him. So in that case, did he say that he was equal to God? The only thing he did was heal a withered hand. And how did the Pharisees react? Jesus derangement syndrome. The Pharisees went out and conspired against him how to destroy him. Were the Pharisees right in their judgment of Jesus? Kind of a rhetorical question. No. I want everybody who hears this recording in the future to understand nobody in here said yes. Everybody said no. Even if they were correct, let's just say for argument's sake, Jesus should have waited until sundown to heal the hand, just for argument's sake. Even if they were correct and Jesus was wrong for healing on the Sabbath, was their reaction one of reason and intellect? No, I mean, we understand in the U.S., we have the idea that the punishment has to fit the crime. So because he heals on the Sabbath, even if they were correct, and they weren't, even if they were correct, is the punishment for healing somebody on the Sabbath when you shouldn't have? Death? Of course, right, exactly. No, they wanted to kill him for it. Of course. Who is the Lord of the Sabbath? Who said he was the Lord of the Sabbath? Son of the man, right? Jesus was. So, you know what? You don't tell the Lord of the Sabbath what's right and wrong to do on the day he is Lord of. You know, interestingly enough, when Mark records the same situation, it shows somebody else getting angry. There's somebody else in Mark's narrative who gets angry. You guys want to take a look at that? Mark 3, 1 through 6. Mark 3, 1 through 6. And this somebody is not recorded in the scriptures getting angry very often. Mark 3, 1 through 6. Are we there? Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. Why do you think they were silent? They either didn't know or they knew the answer. Sometimes what you'll find when you, especially like in business and stuff, or actually just go to a hearing, right, up on Capitol Hill, and when you know what the answer should be but you don't want to say it, you'll be silent. Or just say you don't recollect, right? Isn't that the other thing? I don't recall, but you'll be silent. They knew the answer. He had asked it in a way. They knew what they should have answered, but they were silent. And he looked around them with what?
Anger.
How often do you read of Jesus getting angry? That's what I mean. That's why I told you. Imagine somebody you know with the withered hand. Wouldn't you get angry? What do you mean you don't want him healed? Right? Find my spot. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at the hardness of heart. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately, Mark likes using that word a lot, immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to do what?
Destroy
him. Did Jesus have Pharisees' derangement syndrome, or was his anger reasonable? It was reasonable, right? I could just imagine it. Like, if you have to, picture a little kid. Aaliyah's sick. Somebody can heal him, and somebody says, "No, you're going to have to wait. We're not giving her any medicine today. That'll mean a pharmacist has to work. And a pharmacist can't work on Saturday, so she's going to have to wait for her antibiotic." You'd say, "What the heck are you talking about?" Jesus' anger was reasonable. It was completely reasonable. So anger, this is important, anger and derangement syndrome are not synonymous. Although I do not believe that we humans have it often, I'll repeat that. I do not believe that we humans have it often, but there is such thing as righteous anger. Okay? Definitely when Jesus has it, or the Father, and sometimes when his people have it. So to keep today's sermon short, assuming it has been, I think so, I'm not going to continue to go through the cases where people would just go bonkers, but for no good reason with Jesus. But I want everyone to remember that although Jesus was 100% sinless, and on earth to help everybody out, including these people who went bonkers, to help out them with the cost of his own life, they wanted to kill him. Accused him of being in league with the devil. I thought of giving some of those. But you remember those verses? Where basically they said he heals by Beelzebub or by demon, you know, that kind of stuff. So they wanted to kill him. They accused him of being in league with the devil. And ultimately, Pilate called together the chief priests and the rulers of the and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him. That's nice, right? He hasn't done anything. He's kind of saying he hasn't done anything wrong. But I'll punish him, then I'll release him. But they all cried together. Listen to these horrible words. They all cried together, away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder. So a true murderer. Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, crucify, crucify him. A third time he said to them, why? What evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him. But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. Now, if you read some of the other ones, a couple background things, Psychology. First of all, Pilate not only was wise enough to know, but didn't his wife warn him? Said, hey, look, I was given a dream. And second of all, what did the Jews, it's not in this one, but what did the Jews, what was their trump card to get Pilate to finally crucify him? Do you remember? Basically said, if you do this, then you're supporting somebody who's in competition with the emperor, right, with Caesar. So they basically kind of threatened him, saying, if you don't kill him, we're going to say this is somebody who claims to be a lord, and you're fighting Caesar. But in the end, the Jews wanted him crucified. So they wanted to murder him. They claimed he was in league with the devil. And ultimately, the crowd, not just the Pharisees, the crowd shouted, crucify, crucify him. Augie, what did you have? Well, not yet. At this point, he's going to be taken away. He'll be dying on the cross not too long from here. Ultimately, the Pharisees and other Jewish leaders got what they wanted. The emotion-driven, not reason and intellect-driven. The emotion-driven, crucify, crucify him crowd got what they demanded. And the sinless Lamb of God was crucified between two thieves. Jesus derangement syndrome. You can just imagine some of them foaming at the mouth. So what does this mean all for you? I was talking to somebody at work today, and we're talking about a thing called crucial conversations. And talking about how this class that I want her to teach for my team is important because it gives application, just not reading a book, but application. Same thing with theology. In the end, it's not that it's not interesting, but in the end, if we can't apply it to ourselves, what is the meaning? What does all this that we've discussed mean for you? Let's take a look at John 15, 18 through 20 to help answer that. John 15, 18 through 20. You there?
No.
Cool. John 15, looking at first at verse 18 and then ending with 20. If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world what? Hates you. You, I could say it over and over for every one of you. Remember the word that I said to you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they would also keep yours. For no reason, the world hated Jesus. As a follower of the Son of God, they hate you too. If they persecuted Jesus, they will persecute you. Jesus derangement syndrome means there will be Christian derangement syndrome. Now, I want to back up. We have a pretty good, God has blessed us in the U.S. So I don't want to act like if the mob doesn't kill you, somehow you've done something wrong. But persecution isn't just being killed or beaten up and stuff like that. And I think that if we look at, say, the last decade and what's happening, we can see it ramping up here. So I just make it clear that, yes, if you never bump heads because of your Christianity, then maybe something's wrong, right? You never have that hard conversation where you explain to somebody why you won't do what they ask you. But I don't want to make it out like, because we happen to be blessed by God to be in a country where persecution, where we're still, in some respects, a Judeo-Christian founded country, or I shouldn't say we'll always be that, but that foundation has some effect still. The future is not necessarily as bright. In the ultimate result of Jesus derangement syndrome, which we will see as Christian derangement syndrome, will sometimes be the same fate that Jesus experienced. This is John 16, 1 through 4. I have said all these things to you to keep you from falling away. So the book of John, he says a lot of stuff like what we've read, and he says, I have said these things to you, so, and he's talking to the disciples, but it's also for us, so you won't fall away. When the persecution happens, right now we live pretty happy, but if you lose your job, if your job gets threatened, Augustine, that's when you'll find out, right? Somebody tells you to do something you can't do, and they basically say it's either you do what I tell you to do or you're fired. That's when you find out. And Jesus is saying, I'm telling you this, Augustine, so that you won't fall away. They will put you out of synagogues. Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering a service to God. And they will do these things because they have not known the Father nor me. But I have said these things to you, that when their hour comes, you may remember that I told them to you. Again, that was John 16, 1 through 4. Christian derangement syndrome. Luckily, as I was mentioning, in the U.S., it has not come to that hour where whoever kills us will think he is offering a service to God. It hasn't come that way. Although, if you read some of the stuff you and I read on Twitter and Facebook, there are some who literally are probably at that point. Luckily, the society as a whole keeps them back. But if you do look at how society reacts to the righteous, to right doing, Christian derangement syndrome is here. Jesus came to earth knowing full well how rabid Jesus derangement syndrome would be. Just think about that. Was he surprised at what happened to him here? He made a choice. He knew how rabid Jesus' derangement syndrome would be. He came against his interest and for your interest, our interest, so that you and me and everybody who believes in him can spend eternity with him. People who live in darkness do not want the light shining on them. Say it one more time. People who live in darkness do not want the light shining on them. They will do whatever they can to block or extinguish that light. Stick with Jesus, but be prepared. Our lights are like little mini low-powered flashlights compared to the sun-like brightness of Christ. Jesus derangement syndrome means folks will still try to extinguish your lights, our lights, one way or another. But I have said these things to you, that when their hour comes, you may remember that I told them to you.